1360 WVOX presents The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel. Provocative conversation about world issues. Now, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Hello and welcome to our program, The Advocates, on WVOX 1460 AM. My name is Richard J. Garfunkel. I am the host of this weekly forum. This program is coming live from New Rochelle, the Queen City, located on the Long Island Sound. It can also be heard streaming live worldwide on WVOX.com. One can call directly to the station at 914-636-0110, but please stay germane to our topic. My guest is author and Rutgers professor Howard Lattin, the author of Climate Change Policy Failures, Why Conventional Mitigation Approaches Cannot Succeed. Professor Lattin and I will discuss why our current policies regarding climate are not working. As I said each week, the mission of the Advocates is to bring to the public differing views on current public policy issues. Public policy, therefore, is what we as a nation legally and traditionally follow. To that end, most of my shows are devoted to that purpose. Welcome, Professor Lattin, to the Advocates, and thank you for joining me today on WVOX.
Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. Howard Lattin is a distinguished professor of law and justice at the John J. Francis Scholar at Rutgers University of Law in Newark, New Jersey. My daughter, I always give a plug, is a graduate of Rutgers College also. He joined the Rutgers faculty in 1976 after earning a Bachelor of Arts from Brandeis and a JD from the Law School of the University of California at Berkeley, where he was the lead article editor of the California Law Review and member of the Order of the COIF. He earned his in his 37 years as a law professor, he's published many highly regarded articles on environmental law, toxic substances, torts, and product liability. He was a Fulbright scholar in Australia during 1992 and in South Africa during 1997, and has traveled extensively all over to almost 40 countries over the past three decades, conducting research on biodiversity, conservation, and climate change issues. You know, the New York Times, on its September 23rd front page of Sunday's newspaper, featured a picture of Greenland's remote kayak harbor in the town of Narsaq. The story is about the choice Greenland faces as global warming has melted its ice cover, almost destroyed its age-old fishing industry, and has exposed vast new deposits of minerals. But the real story to most of us was the stark view of small melting icebergs in its once busy harbor. In northeastern Greenland, the average yearly temperature has risen 4.5 degrees in the past 15 years, and scientists predict the area could warm by between 14 and 21 degrees by the end of the century. Professor Lattin, were you shocked by this front page story, or did this picture confirm the reality of what you and others have been saying for many years?
Well, it was certainly an interesting graphic picture, but I wouldn't say I was shocked. A decade ago, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change predicted that there would be about a foot of rising sea level within the end of the century. Now people are talking about that amount of rising sea level by the end of this decade. So the previous predictions about sea level rises have been already exceeded, and it's a known devastating problem because so many people live along the coastline in the United States and in the world generally. The major contributors are the melting of the Greenland ice cap and the melting of parts of the Antarctic ice cap. And there's every reason to believe that if the global warming continues or gets worse, as it seems to be, that Greenland won't have a choice. It will have to develop a new economy to match its new geography and its new
new realities.
Right. Yeah.
You know, in your book, you challenge climate policy mistakes that are resulting in the adoption of misguided efforts with no chance of achieving genuine climate change progress. How far back do these mistakes go? And is there any doubt now that we're facing full-fledged global warming?
as to how far back, there are different ways of measuring it. Some people date it back to the Industrial Revolution, the beginning, which would be about 1800. But most people, I think, most scientists, talk about it not getting to be a serious threat until 1950. So let's call it 60 years. As for any doubt about full-fledged global warming, absolutely not. There's a diagram called the Keeling Curve, which reflects measurements that were taken on Mauna Kea Mountain in Hawaii. And the Keeling Curve shows that every year the amount of greenhouse gases, that's heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere, has gone up steadily. So it's a, although it's called a curve, it's actually a straight line going up towards the right, and it directly corresponds to the heat in the Earth's atmosphere and to the heat on the Earth's surface, which has been getting progressively hotter. 2012 is well on its way to being the hottest year in recorded human history. So I don't think there's any doubt at all that global warming and climate change are getting progressively worse. And if you look at the terrible weather conditions of the last couple of years, climate change is here now. It's not just something for the future.
You know, some scientists who we both know better understand that we are in the throes of global warming, as you've stated. And they're not really sure. They claim they're not really sure of either the cause, the cure, or whether it's man-made or natural, and do not think we can reverse the trend without destroying the Western economy. How do you view this problem, and are these folks, let's call them self-delusional, on the pay of the fossil fuel lobby, or just sincere and don't understand the problem, or maybe are on someone's payroll, as I mentioned? What's your thinking on this?
Well, that's a lot of different issues. Let me start by saying that for every one scientist who questions whether man-made activities are causing climate change, there are 1,000 scientists, or more than 1,000, who are convinced that we are the major contributing factor in the increase in atmospheric conditions and temperatures. Secondly, as for the small, very small percentage of doubters or people who say they're confused about global climate change, there may be some who are sincere, but I'm sure that the majority of them are being sponsored by fossil fuel industries and other lobbyists in favor of continuing the current destructive greenhouse gas discharging practices. So I just don't think there's any significant doubt, if you look at the literature as a whole, that human beings, through their industrial activities, through putting out more and more greenhouse gases every year, are causing global climate change to get consistently worse.
Well, you know, we're in a political year, and we understand the nature of our political system, and I don't want to use the term fouled up, but do you see, you know, before we come into our break, any way that this influence, we understand the strong, powerful influence of the fossil fuel lobby, is going to relent? Is there anything that can help that force them to relent, or is it just a matter of electing new people? As President Obama says, the change doesn't come in Washington. It comes somewhere else. In other words, our new people have to get into Congress who are not in these people's pocket.
Well, I would be inclined to say that there are two ways change can happen, either political change in which we elect different representatives, or the development of new technologies that can achieve what the fossil fuels are achieving, but without the continuing damage to our climate. So I think that the best thing would be if we worked on both of those at the same time, on getting better, cleaner technology, and on changing people's views about political representation.
Well, it was very interesting in the U.S. automobile and international automobile market how the amount of electric or fusion or hybrid cars actually tripled in the last month. Unfortunately, it's still a drop in the bucket, the amount of cars sold. We have to go to a commercial break. My guest is author and Rutgers professor Howard Latin, the author of Climate Change, Failures, Policy Failures, Why Conventional Mitigation Approaches Cannot Succeed. We've been discussing his views on why our current national politics policies regard climate change are not working. You're listening to The Advocates on WVOX Radio, 1460 AM, live streaming at WVOX.com. We have to go to a short financial news break, and we'll be back in a few short moments. Thank you.
Business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, Wall Street continues its upward trend. At 12 p.m. Eastern Time, the Dow is higher by 43 points. Investors also bullish for Netflix. This after Citi Investment Group affirmed the video streaming company's buy rating and $120 price target. Citi recently conducted a survey that showed there are signs customer satisfaction with Netflix's services has gotten better. BB Stores has hired a search firm to assist it with finding a new CEO. The move follows the retailer's nearly 9.5% drop in same-store sales last month. And some good news for bald men. People perceive men with shaved heads as being more masculine, more dominant, according to a recent study by the University of Pennsylvania. Some of the most prominent businessmen out there are donning the look, too, like DreamWorks CEO Jeffrey Katzenberg and Amazon.com CEO Jeff Bezos. With Fox Business Report, I'm Lauren Simonetti.
Every day, businesses lose critical customer and financial data as a result of cybercrimes, human errors, and natural disasters. Barracuda Networks, the world leader in content security, application delivery, and data protection, with more than 130,000 customers worldwide, can help. Barracuda Backup Service combines local backup and deduplication for rapid restores with data storage in the cloud for fail-safe disaster recovery. Protect your critical data. Visit Barracuda.com/backup to try Barracuda Backup Service free for 30 days. That's Barracuda.com/backup.
1460 WVOX.
There's always something happening with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com.
Welcome back to The Advocates. You're listening to WVOX Radio, 1460 AM, live streaming at WVOX.com with my guest author and Rutgers professor Howard Latin, the author of Climate Change Policy Failures, Why Conventional Mitigation Approaches Cannot Succeed. The last 10 years, or 10 hottest years in recorded human history, have occurred since 1998. And this year is well on its way, as Professor Latin has said, to setting a new annual record for high temperatures. Professor Latin, what are some of the impacts we have seen on the U.S. agriculture, forests, which include some of the worst droughts since the Dust Bowl era during the Great Depression?
Well, the first thing you can do is look at the prices of corn, of soybeans, and of a number of other crops, all of which have gone up greatly because of the drought that's been killing them. Secondly, you could see that the prices of food in other countries, in poor countries, is being greatly impacted by the reduced volume of exports that our agricultural program is able to make. In addition to that, many crops are lost through flooding and some through wildfires, especially out in the West. Basically, all I could say is that the conditions that global climate change and global warming are creating are not desirable conditions, not agriculturally productive conditions, but instead they're significantly damaging our agricultural output.
Yeah, and it's very critical, as one of the great producers from our grain belt for food, not only for ourselves. I believe food in the United States is still the cheapest in the world, and it's important because of the growing world population to continue to have adequate continuing growing supplies. You know, recently we've seen the partial closing of the Mississippi River, shorter and milder winters, the killing off of millions of acres of a western forest because of the larvae of the western pine beetle. They're not being killed by traditional cold weather, it seems. We've heard and seen some national news coverage of the problems of navigation on the Mississippi, but there's been scant coverage of the decimation of our forests. Professor Lattin, why are these really back page new non-news stories to the networks and cable television? Isn't it sexy enough or what?
Well, first of all, I think there is more coverage in the areas that are being hardest hit. For example, Colorado, Wyoming, Idaho, and the western part of the United States where millions of acres of trees have been damaged. But there are good reasons why they don't want to publicize it excessively, as tourism is one of their major attractions, one of their major industries, and no one wants to go see millions of acres of dead and dying trees. Also, they contribute to fires, and no one wants to go into a fire zone if they can help it. So I think it's in the interests of the economies of the states that are suffering this widespread pine tree devastation to not publicize it. And then, as usual, there's also the heavy advertising content from fossil fuel industries that certainly you know, is preventing many public media sources from describing what's happening.
You know, it's interesting here, and you bring up the fossil fuel industry. Here we are discussing quite actively the future of Indian Point, which is obviously everybody in this region knows the nuclear. How do you stand on nuclear as an alternative to fossil fuel, especially regarding safety and its possible replacement by fossil fuel alternatives? What's your position on that?
When Atoms for Peace was a new initiative in the early 1950s. The one large issue was how to deal with nuclear wastes, and the other one was the possibility of an accident with nuclear plants. And now, 60 years later, those same issues have not been resolved or solved in any particular way. So I just can't be positive about nuclear energy. Even though it helps the climate, it doesn't damage the climate the way fossil fuels do, but we don't have a solution for these problems, and all you have to do is look at Japan in the last year to see that it could turn into a disaster at any time or any moment. And, you know, it would be impossible to evacuate millions of people from New York City if something happened to Indian Point. It's also a potential target for terrorists, although I think it's well guarded. So, but if someone was flying a big jet plane into the Indian Point power plant, there's nothing that security could do to prevent that. So in general, I would say we should be aiming for safer, more diversified, renewable energy sources. Nuclear power is better for the climate than fossil fuels, but nuclear power has its own problems that have been recognized for decades and that have not been solved and still aren't even close to being solved.
You know, before we go to the next break, as a result of global warming, sea levels, as you have mentioned, are rising quicker than anticipated. Low-lying coastal areas could be obviously in jeopardy. I assume you're not only worried about the vulnerability of these areas, but would suggest being leery about investing in pricey oceanfront property. Would you see insurance as a factor in determining whether people continually to overbuild on our coastal areas? And do you think that insurance increases will make builders resistant to this? Or is that a non-factor? People just like to build there?
people do like to build there, but we have the federal flood insurance program that helps people rebuild and rebuild again, and then in some cases rebuild yet again when their property is damaged by floods. And it's the population of the United States or U.S. taxpayers as a whole who are paying for this flood insurance. No private insurance companies will pay for major flood insurance. So you have to get federally financed or federally backed flood insurance. The simple fact is that human beings, and especially in the United States, for centuries have lived where they wanted, and they've changed the environment to suit their living preferences.
So
everyone likes to live near coasts and rivers, but now we've reached the point where we have to change our preferences to fit in with the dangers being created by climate change rather than the reverse.
I have to go to a break. Very interesting perspective how insurance dictates that maybe the end of federal flood insurance would have less risky properties built. My guest is author Rutgers Professor Howard Lattin, the author of Climate Change Policy Failures. We've been discussing his views on current national policies regarding climate and whether they're working. You're listening to The Advocates on WVOX Radio, 1460 AM. We're going to a break.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. After months of talking about each other, President Obama and Mitt Romney share a stage at tonight's debate in Denver. It'll be largely about the economy. Romney spokeswoman Andrea Saul tells Fox,
his own vice president said the middle class has been buried under his policies. And so what we need is Governor Romney to come in and deliver a real recovery for the American people.
Obama campaign spokesman Ben LaBolt says Vice President Biden was referring to Republican policies causing the problems.
It was a specific reference to the policies that crashed the economy and devastated the middle class, and we certainly can't return to those.
The debate can be heard on many of these Fox News radio stations. American businesses added 162,000 private sector jobs last month, according to the payroll processor ADP. That's fewer than in August. Another report finds the number of service sector jobs grew at the fastest pace since March. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Do you really think this is the right time to expand our business?
Absolutely. With the emphasis being placed on lending and access to capital, this is the perfect time for growth.
But how do you know where to begin?
The same place that helped us start our business. The New York State Small Business Development Center can help with growth and expansion, too.
And the SBDC services are still free?
That's right. SBDC advisement services are free of charge. Visit nyssbdc.org to request assistance.
So what are you waiting for? Do I have to do everything myself?
Funded in part through a cooperative agreement between the USSBA and New York State. Sponsored by the New York State Small Business Development Center.
Dry cleaning. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I have a real thing about this, and I've been telling you for years that when it comes to custom quality dry cleaning, you know, where you get your clothes back in perfect shape without that awful chemical cleaning smell, there's only really one dry cleaner that I know of in all of Westchester you can always count on. Scott Solomon Solo Clean. It's on the Post Road in Mamaroneck, New York. So if you want your valuable clothes returned in like new, pristine condition without that awful commercial cleaning smell, please try Solo Clean. The cost for their professional custom handling is really, incidentally, really the same you're probably paying right now. Solo Clean in Mamaroneck, New York on the Post Road. They're the best dry cleaner in Westchester. I'll go up against anybody on that claim.
Now rising on the beautiful 34-acre campus of the Wartburg with its gardens, walking paths, and gazebos is a new affordable senior residence. The Wartburg campus is tucked behind a quiet residential neighborhood on the Mount Vernon-Pelham border, just blocks from the Hutchinson River Parkway in southern Westchester. At this site, they've been providing care for more than 140 years. Today, the Wartburg includes independent and assisted living facilities, adult day services, and a nationally acclaimed long-term nursing facility. There's an on-site chapel and a full calendar of social and recreational activities. This new affordable senior residence at the Wartburg includes studio and one-bedroom apartments. Rents range from $726 to $1,009 per month, including heat. There's free parking, elevators, bamboo floors, a fitness center, and an on-site service coordinator. Applications are now being accepted on a first-come, first-served basis. Please contact the Housing Action Council at the Wartburg at 914-332-4144 or online at www.housingactioncouncil.org. That's www.housingactioncouncil.org. The new affordable senior residence at the Wartburg. 914-332-4144.
Whether you're working,
I like to listen to music when I work,
or working out
when I'm in the gym,
we're working for you. VOX.
WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates. You're listening to WVOX Radio, 1460 AM, live streaming at WVOX.com. My guest is author and Rutgers professor Howard Lattin. I have his book right in front of me, Climate Change Policy Failures, Why Conventional Mitigation Approaches Cannot Succeed. You have written that fundamental policy mistakes, which virtually all conventional mitigation initiatives shared, are flawed and have no chance of reversing climate change back to normality. Why is that so, Professor Lattin?
Well, that's certainly a central part of my book. President Obama, various congressmen, and international treaties all focus on a slow process of reducing climate change gases or gas discharges a little bit each decade until finally in 2050 there's supposed to be a major cutback without anyone ever specifying what the means are that are going to achieve it. But what they don't understand is that cutting back on global greenhouse gases isn't enough as long as you allow more greenhouse gases to continue to get into the atmosphere and to combine with the already too high level of gases that are already in the atmosphere. So they're talking about cutting back on a year-to-year basis. They're not recognizing that the gases they'll continue to allow are combining with the greenhouse gases that are already in the atmosphere to lead to exacerbated global climate change. So what I'm saying is they're focusing on cutting emissions a small amount now, not getting really serious about it for another four decades, during which a huge amount of greenhouse gases will continue to be discharged and will combine with the too high level of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere that exists now. That's what's been bringing us all the bad weather and bad climate considerations in the last couple of years. So it's just not good enough to cut out a percentage of greenhouse gases and to allow all the rest of the greenhouse gases to keep going into the atmosphere and combining with the high level of greenhouse gases that are already in the atmosphere. And that's what every one of the major climate change programs is planning to do. So it's just too little, too late. And also, I don't want to get technical, but the biggest greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide, and it also is the most persistent, meaning once it gets into the atmosphere, it will stay there for hundreds or thousands of years. So we just can't afford to put out hundreds of tons more greenhouse gases that are going to stay there without our being able to remove them forever. And that's the consequence of deferring effective action for decades into the future.
We don't want it irreversible. We have a caller. Caller, please give us your question to Professor
Lattin.
Hello.
Hi. I'm here. Okay. I don't know what happened to the caller.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. Speak. Give us your question, please.
Okay. How are you doing, Richard? Michael Goldberg out here in Santa Barbara, California. And thank you for connecting me to the show. I'm very impressed with you and Professor Latin. As you both know, Santa Barbara's a hotbed for environmental. They claim, you know, out here to leading the nation in that. And especially with the oil spill, they had a bad oil spill back in 69. And with all the political influence here, the Republicans blocked, as you both well know, the legislation, because they don't believe there's global warming. It's been hot as hell out here the past couple of weeks. It's unusually hot. And so my question is, you know, even with the political influence here, what can be done? It's like we're just spinning our wheels, going around in circles. Meanwhile, all this is going on. It's like a political deadlock.
Thank you, Michael, for the question. Professor Latin, is there anything, a way to address Mr. Goldberg's concerns out in Santa Barbara? Anything immediately, protests, etc.? What's your thinking?
First of all, everyone knows that our political system is deadlocked at the moment and nothing's going to happen until next year at the very earliest. After that, I think the emphasis that we have to put is on developing clean replacement technologies which can add jobs and wealth to our economy, as well as avoiding climate damage because it won't be putting out greenhouse gases. So we have to show people that the technologies exist that can do and maintain what we want, but at the same time not continue to damage the atmosphere. I think the Republicans are unlikely to support that. So basically the Democrats are about the only hope of getting an emphasis on jobs from green technology. Which is pretty much the only way I could see that we can make any progress in the next few years. That's assuming that we don't have another Hurricane Katrina or some other major disaster that will swing the American population over to an action point. Most of our environmental laws have been adopted after major news events resulting from catastrophic effects. For example, a Superfund program was adopted after the Love Canal toxic wastes became known. That's where a community had been built on top of terrible toxic waste from the Hooker Chemical Company. And Water Pollution and Clean Air Act were both adopted because of high levels of pollution that were producing major illnesses and other things. So, you know, you can look at the climate change at the moment and say it's getting worse and worse, but I don't think there'll be a major political response until there are real disasters or catastrophes, or until there's a new leadership that recognizes that we can get new jobs, better incomes, and be more creative by developing better technologies that can replace the current harmful technologies.
You know, if President Obama wins re-election in November and actually took back control of the House, he would have a great deal of difficulty taking still on the fuel lobby. Just look at the problems he had with Keystone Pipeline. It's interesting that the state of Nebraska, where the Keystone Pipeline was supposedly to go through to the Gulf Coast, had 17 different options that were rejected by a state that is one of the reddest states, one of the most conservative, one of the most Republican states in the union. And it really is an interesting aspect to that it's been looked at as being blocked by the administration. But people forget pipelines go through states and there's the potentiality of leaks. And this is heavy, ugly, fuel that could, it doesn't lay on the surface of lakes when there's pollution. It goes to the bottom. In fact, there's a, I believe, a river near Cincinnati they've been trying to clear up for 2 years now. What would you recommend to President Obama or even Governor Mitt Romney, if he's elected, to do first regarding action, if they had the ability or the will to do that action?
What I would recommend is developing a committee based on scientists from the National Academy of Sciences and the National Academy of Engineers, and having them choose the technologies that are most likely to be affordable and to be able to replace fossil fuel technologies that are going to continue damaging our atmosphere, and then to take those technologies and put major investments in them with the idea of getting them widespread and creating jobs and export opportunities so that we can both help our economy and help reduce climate change dangers.
I have to go to a commercial break. My guest is author and Rutgers professor Howard Latin, the author of Climate Change, Climate Change Policy Failures, Why Conventional Mitigation Approaches Cannot Succeed. We've been discussing his views on national policies regarding climate, energy, fossil fuel. You're listening to The Advocates on WVOX Radio 1460 AM.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. It's the first of three debates tonight between President Obama and Mitt Romney. Obama campaign spokesperson Ben LeBault says the strategy is not about one-liners.
We view the debates like we view the convention. Millions of Americans tuning in for the first time who want to hear about the economic choice in this election.
As for his Republican rival,
Mitt Romney's campaign spokesperson Andrea Saul, meantime, trying to downplay expectations for the Republicans' first ever presidential debate.
You know, I'm sure it's going to be hard to outshine him.
Tonight's 90-minute affair is centered on domestic policy, half of that time set aside for economic issues.
Fox Radio's Jared Halpern at the debate site in Denver. The grandfather of a six-year-old girl killed during the Colorado theater shootings, begging a thief to return the last photos he has of the child. The images on a memory card in one of several cameras stolen from his house this week. And U.S. businesses hired fewer workers in September than August, according to payroll processor ADP. Fox News, we report, you decide.
This is Bill O'Shaughnessy with an important word for business owners in our region. These changing times, I think, present a whole new set of problems for proprietors, for owners of independent regional companies. But with all the change, I think, comes new opportunities. And thus, we recommend highly the Alan D. Rosenberg Company. Founded by Alan Rosenberg, he's a wonderful man, as a specialized accounting practice for independent local companies. Alan Rosenberg and Company know the pressures and problems of maintaining and growing a retailer service business in this day and age. With offices in Westchester and in the city, Alan Rosenberg and Company earned their professional spurs for over 30 years now, advising large, very prestigious firms and high net worth individuals, as they're called. And they have a special understanding, thus, of smaller growing companies where they are today, I think, unequaled in the field. So if you're satisfied with your present accounting firm and financial advisors, so be it. But if you're looking for a little more brain power from an independent accounting practice where they don't farm it out to a computer, we suggest you call the Alan D. Rosenberg Accounting Firm for a consultation. If you've been feeling it's time your accountant, and I feel like this, spoke your language and was a little more on your wavelength, Alan Rosenberg and Company. The number is 914-722-6901 in the county, or in Manhattan, 212-382-3939. In Westchester, 914-722-6901. Manhattan, 212-382-3939. These guys really know.
Wherever you listen.
In the shower.
I listen to it all the time. I listen at work, in my car, when I get up.
Thanks for keeping it here. WVOX Worldwide.
The voice of Westchester.
WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates. You're listening to WVOX Radio, 1460 AM, and live streaming at WVOX.com. My guest is author and Rutgers professor Howard Lattin, the author of Climate Change Policy Failures. We've been discussing the lack of an effective public policy to deal with global warming, the problem of fossil fuel, the potential replacement of it by clean energy to change the profile of the disposition of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. You know, the United States has only 5 to 6% of the world's population, but it does use 25% of the world's oil. But if we could theoretically wean ourselves off fossil fuel, China and India, with more than a third of the world's population, will continue to industrialize and be major users of coal and oil. Professor Lattin, would we be fighting a losing battle here in America by going it alone? And is there any way to bring these huge emerging economies online with us?
We cannot go it alone. China is now the world's biggest discharger of greenhouse gases, and India has moved into third place after the United States. If they continue to rely on coal, which is the one fossil fuel that they both have in abundance, that would simply be catastrophic for the whole Earth's population. So one of the great problems is that although they've made enormous economic progress, they still have hundreds of millions of poor people. And as a result, they're absolutely adamant that development and poverty alleviation are their highest priorities, and dealing with climate change is much lower in terms of government priorities. So seems pretty obvious to me that the only thing we can do is create a way to improve their development and at the same time to not damage the climate. So our only workable strategy is to develop these alternate clean technologies that I've mentioned before and then have them sold to or exported to or given to developing countries so that they can get the development they insist on while at the same time not further damaging the climate. And one of the terrible mistakes of the Obama plan and all of the other American emissions reduction plans is that just saying cut your emissions doesn't give the developing countries what they want. Mm. That would be a barrier to development rather than helpful in development. So we have to go far beyond saying just cut your emissions or stop using coal. We have to provide alternatives that will be able to achieve both goals. One is to improve their development, and the other one is to reduce the discharges of greenhouse gases that are making climate change worse.
Yeah, it's very interesting because the idea of decarbonization must be, as you've indicated, as we all know, a worldwide effort. And therefore, we must convince this other part of the world, 94% of it outside our borders, and of course, Europe, I think, has a sense of this, to adopt clean alternative technologies, especially in the energy and transportation fields. I would assume, and I'm interested in whether you concur on this, that that could be a great export item for both the United States and Europe, a cheap alternative, whether they be cheaper cars, electric cars, fusion cars, and a process of industrialization that would be non-polluting. Is this realistic in the short run and achievable?
The answer is, while we twiddle our thumbs, China has by far been putting the most effort into developing clean energy technologies. At the same time that they're using coal because it's cheap, they're developing things like they now dominate most of the wind turbine market around the world. They now dominate most of the solar panel market around the world. So they are putting major effort into developing climate-friendly technologies while we're doing very little, if anything. So if we really got into developing better technologies such as fusion, such as plasma gasification, which means burning garbage at such high temperatures that you can collect the gas from it and not have it go into the atmosphere. If we did these things that we've developed, we would have an export market. We have more opportunities, economic opportunities, growth, but we're not putting emphasis on it at all now. Mm. So we're basically giving up our scientific capacities or lead, and it's going to be China giving us clean technologies, not us giving it to China.
That's a very interesting perspective. You know, we have only a few seconds left, and recently we've seen a partial collapse of the subsidized American effort to create strong solar energy business, and the lack of popularity. I mentioned this. It is growing, but it's still not intruding. Maybe we're not able to produce enough popularity regarding battery and fusion cars. Fusion car goes for $39,000. And of course, that's, most people say nobody buys them. They only lease them. Professor Lattin, could you describe your thoughts on how we could shape a new public policy and how we resist this idea that government is no good? If government does subsidize these solar panels, makes them able, isn't that good public policy to spend our money that way?
I think it would be very good public policy if we did it the right way. But the former solar panel disaster was pure, I can't call it nepotism because it wasn't giving money to in the family, but it was giving money to political connections. Mm-hmm. What we need is an independent scientific commission to identify what kind of technologies we should be putting our money into, and then to provide subsidies and disseminate the technologies. So I think we could do infinitely better than we're doing now. And the bottom line is that, believe it or not, the oil industry is still getting massively greater subsidies from our government, even though it's the richest industry in the world. They're still getting massive subsidies that dwarf the amount of money and effort that we're putting into renewable energy sources and climate-safe sources.
It all comes back
to politics.
Of course. We only have a few seconds left, Professor Lattin. This has been very informative. Tell us about your book, where it can be bought, and what is your website?
Sure. My book can be bought at my website, which is ecovitality.org. That's the word vitality with eco in front of it, ecovitality.org. Or it can be bought at amazon.com. Or it can be ordered from any significant bookstore around the country. The thing about ecovitality.org and the amazon.com sites is they have information that describes the book, and they have endorsements from various scholars explaining why the book is worthwhile.
What possessed you to do this? I know you have a background in ecological law and different dealing with the ecology and toxic waste, etc., as a law professor. And do you have any other books in mind, or are you're happy that this one has been done? What's your thinking on that?
Well, first of all, I'm a bit of a contrarian, and I looked at the climate change area and saw that all of the proposals from environmental groups, from governments, from international organizations, they were all this long drawn out emissions reduction programs. And if everyone agrees that this is what we should be doing, then I would say in 99% of the chance of cases, they're wrong. So I didn't see much critical or serious thinking going on. stopping climate change.
Well, we need people like yourself to do that, to be experts on this. That's what this program is about. The advocates, people coming on who know what they're talking about. I appreciate your views on this, and it's something that we have a tendency to put in the back of our mind. But I've always felt that the anti-nihilist is the one who thinks about his grandchildren and great-grandchildren, even though he may not even see the great-grandchildren. He wants a world for them to inherit. I want to thank you for joining me on The Advocates and speaking to this most critical concern to all of us and coming generations. Thank you.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. If you want to hear this broadcast or any of the other archived Advocate broadcasts, you can access on my website, advocates-wvox.com, where the information on all my guests is always posted. Next week, I'll be welcoming back economic historian Jeff Madrick, the author of The Age of Greed. We'll be discussing the real 47%, who they are, why their characterization may be one of the biggest political gaffes since former President Gerald Ford liberated Poland from communism. Thank you. Have a great day. And thank you again, Professor Ladd.
To The Advocates on 1460 WVOX.